Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and I'm so excited to have in the studio today, representing the political left, Senator Kathleen Reby. Welcome, Kathleen.
Thank you so much.
Tell us, we're going to introduce, well, and on the right, Senator
The other
Dan
guy.
McKay, Dan McKay.
Just that other guy.
Hello,
Hi.
Everybody.
Welcome home.
Kathleen, tell us a little bit about where you represent, a little bit about yourself. I think some of our listeners met you. This is your first session that you just finished.
This is my first session.
Yeah.
I represent Cottonwood Heights, Midvale, Murray, a sliver of Sandy, and a sliver of Mill Creek. I am a school teacher in Granite School District. I teach in Robert Frost Elementary School and Elk Run. And I am I was a former school board member.
Love it. So we're going to talk a little bit about education today, capture
Fantastic.
Some of your experience. I will also mention that Senator Reby is my senator, my state senator. I'm a Murray resident, so nice to put names with a face and get to know you a little better.
Those that can't see, okay, so this is the little piece of insider part. So on the Senate floor, I am the lowliest freshman of the freshmen.
Okay.
I sit front and center as close to the speaker, as close to the president as I possibly could be. Sitting right behind me is the esteemed colleague, Senator Reby, who sits right behind me. And it is one of my favorite things, honestly, during the floor to have an association with Kathleen. She is awesome.
Nice.
My kids came up to the floor, and she is so great with the kids. And my other favorite thing about Kathleen is she is a terrible poker player. And so what happens is
you can read her.
You can read
thoughts.
What she's thinking. And my favorite are the gasps that come up of her disappointment in a vote that I've made or a comment I've made or whatever. So she's great.
You remember the Far Side cartoon where they're playing poker and the dog has his hand out and his tail's wagging?
Yeah.
That's Kathleen.
That's right.
Well, let's start out the program by talking about the international news that affected really a lot of us, the burning of Notre Dame Cathedral.
Crazy.
Wow. That was crazy.
And my heart hurt.
Yeah. Well, and it was an expression broadly. It's these sorts of tragedies often bring countries together.
Yeah.
Where were you, Kathleen, when you saw that this was going down? And give us just a personal reflection of that incredible cathedral.
I was teaching school, and it flashes across your feed, and you're like, "Oh my gosh!" And, you know, and you wonder whether you should be sharing this because some of our kids don't really understand what that actually means. I mean, this took 200 years to build this church, and it's been the center of so many debates and hostile takeovers, and kings have brought stuff.
Movies,
there, so it's amazing that and you're like, "Oh wow!" And then, like I said, I'm going there this summer, so I was really heartbroken that I wouldn't get a chance to share that with my kids.
Oh, that's so sad.
It's one of those.
I've been there before, but I wanted to share it with my
kids. Yeah.
It's one of those events that you always remember where you were when you heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
Dan, I want to hear your story, but I'll just say that I was with the Salt Lake Tribune religion reporter, Peggy Fletcher Stack. She was at the Institute meeting with me on an issue, and someone mentioned it. So I thought that was kind of interesting to be with the religion reporter right as this is happening. Of course, she knew all about it and that.
I call
Dan,
Peggy kind of a gossip columnist.
another issue. She is the best faith reporter probably in the United States.
Okay.
I'll be that big on her.
All right.
Okay,
yeah.
So but give us your quick, you have a memory of the cathedral.
Well, I was just going to say, I'm watching this thing. And so in September, I think it was 2016, like the beginning of September 2016 was the last time my wife and I were in Paris. And we just happened to be like walking through Notre Dame and just admiring the beauty that
this is
the
City of Light.
It is. Yeah. And Notre Dame is amazing. If you know, for those of you who haven't been there, I feel terrible that you're going to miss out on this treasure of what it was.
Right on the River Seine.
Yeah, right there.
Bridges.
And it's got rivers really on both sides of it. I mean, to get to it, you've got to cross a river, and then you can cross the river on the
That's
other
right.
side. But, you know, it's riverfront, and you're looking and you're walking around. So my wife and I get out. We're taking all these pictures, and then we get out, and we're walking to go get on a bike. And as we're walking by, there is a car that is literally filled, looks like propane tanks from a gas barbecue stove, right? And I'm like, wow, that's weird. There's a lot of barbecue propane tanks. And then we just get on our bikes and we ride away. That night, we're back in our hotel room, we see the report that there was a failed propane bomb attack on Notre Dame.
Jeez.
And I just remember thinking, wow, we were that close, right?
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, as I was watching, I was in my office and somebody says Notre Dame's on fire. Turn up the footage, and I get there with the footage. It seemed just in time to watch the footage of the spire
coming down
through the, and it hurt my heart.
Yeah, so
that much history.
We all feel a sense of loss, and
it kind of brings me back to 9/11. You know, seeing those go down, it just really, as a New Yorker, it just crushes you, and you just start to cry.
Yeah, but we can all feel part of the. They're going to get this thing rebuilt, and it looks like they're off to a great start.
Well, and it didn't seem like, and you know, there have been stories of heroism of artifacts that were saved by priests that were there. Very cool.
A human chain.
Yeah.
Handing them over to other people, which just renews your faith in humanity.
Yeah, it does.
But
so,
the other part,
and
that
we need
all
that
look
renewal
at,
of faith.
Yes, we
you
do.
You know, because we're going to talk about some things that don't really renew your faith in humanity in just a minute.
But there was, I mean, the other part of it is, it's clear, it seems like it was some kind of construction problem that caused the fire. And two, at least that's what we know now. And then the other part of it is, it doesn't seem like there was any loss of life.
Yeah. Which is amazing.
Which is amazing considering how many people are there. I mean, Paris in the spring and it was amazing.
Yeah,
so there are a lot
of
things to be grateful for.
Well, so we are here recording this on Wednesday. This program airs first on Thursday morning. And Thursday morning is when the Mueller report is going to see the light of day. I'm told 9 a.m. Eastern time to Congress. So there's going to be a lot of news breaking tomorrow.
It's always one of the things that's like we regret about the program is we record it. And then almost simultaneously while we're talking about it, there is going to be this an amazing like news breaking story that the Democrats have been super wrong for a super long time and that all of this stuff goes in the wayside. And my prediction is the Dems will double down in D.C. on the report. But there you go.
Okay. Well, because that's one thing. We're trying to get your political instincts. Kathleen, what do you think we're going to see in this report? Where does it go next?
Well, I'm trying to follow both sides of the aisle when I hear people talking about the Mueller report. And I'm just like, I want to see what it says. I want to see for myself. I want to read parts of it.
I guess it's like 400 pages. Am I getting that right?
Yeah.
I hope it's not redacted
too much.
Too
bad.
You're not going to read any, are you?
I'm going to read a big part of it.
Okay.
I like to read. I read a book last night.
Was that those close to the president are nervous about some of their statements being the public record. And that could be interesting.
Yeah, that's always the part, right, is the testimony that comes out and the footnotes.
Yeah.
And that was the case with the Starr report.
Yeah.
And it will be the case with the Mueller report. The footnotes tend to be more damaging to those who made statements than it is to the actual president or whatever it might
be. When I worked as a political appointee at both EPA and HHS, but I had a couple of times where the inspector general had to interview me, and I just remember it being pretty gut-wrenching because they're in the building with you. This is different than obviously the AG, but I'm just saying oversight. They're in the building with you, but their job is to just nail you if you've done anything ethically wrong. And so when you talk to them, you're just like, I got to be completely transparent and honest or this is going to come back and hit me. But I mean, being transparent and honest, I might expose somebody. You know, it's just tough.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting tomorrow. Let's do one more bit of national news before we go to the break. We've got a presidential candidate in town, Elizabeth Warren. I guess she's toured one of our Wasatch Canyons today. Am I getting this right, Kathleen?
She started in Moab.
Okay.
Yep,
in the morning and then got up to...
So this is really a public land push. Mm-hmm. She's saying that she will restore the original boundaries of Grand Staircase and Bears Ears. Kathleen, what's your comment from the left?
Well, I was going over the Antiquities Act, and the second part of it says we're supposed to preserve the smallest piece, and I think there's something to be said for that. As I sit on the left side, because I want to see both sides. I do think that as we look at Notre Dame burning and then we think about all the historic artifacts in there, how do we preserve Notre Dame and then say, oh, but these historic facts that came from our predecessors aren't as important.
Yeah.
So I look at it as an analogy, like if we want to preserve that and we're devastated by that structure, we should be equally as devastated by those structures.
This is really interesting to me because I worked in the state planning office for more than a decade, which is where public lands were managed in this state at the time. They didn't have a state public lands office at the time. Anyway, I would have never guessed that there would be this much presidential interest in public land issues to, to have had a presidential visit from Trump, to have a national monument, declared by Obama, taken away by Trump, or adjusted, I should say, by Trump. And now we've had a public lands bill declare another national monument in our state, the Jurassic Park National Monument. A lot of people don't realize that that happened in the last month.
Yeah. I think having this happen with this national monuments setting a bad precedent, and that's what scares me the most. You know? Taking away something else that somebody has created, regardless of which side you're on, that kind of concerns me.
Dan, this is Elizabeth Warren appealing to the environmental vote in her bid to try and get the Democratic nomination. Am I right?
Yeah. I think so. And honestly, it's more of a shout to a fundraising base than it necessarily is to a campaign promise, unfortunately. And I think, this is just my opinion, I think her comments kind of ring hollow a little bit. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. I do think that Senator Reby's right. There does need to be a preservation effort. I don't think that there is, and I think she cast it in line. I think that's a fair concern and fair question. You know, the question is, should you protect all of France because Notre Dame is in the middle of it, mm-hmm. and therefore nothing can change in France? Mm-hmm. Or do you just protect where Notre Dame was? And I would be probably more of a protect Notre Dame rather than all of France. But
it's interesting that we're going to be a Super Tuesday state, if I've gotten this right.
Also fun, yeah.
Yeah, and so that, I think, affects all these dynamics.
We will see more presidential visits this year.
Yeah, so something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm sitting here with Senator Reby and Senator Dan McKay. In our next segment, we're going to talk about local news. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
This is Dan McKay on the right.
Kathleen Reby on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and you are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We mentioned at the end of the last segment about Super Tuesday. I just want to make sure our listeners understand this, because this is new for us.
Yeah.
Senator Bramble is he knows a lot about elections.
Yeah.
He's really good at it.
Yeah.
And what was it? Was it just this year that the bill passed, or am I?
It was just this year.
Okay.
And Senator Bramble, they came along with the $3 million cost that we're going to join just for the presidential only, that we're going to join Super Tuesday and have the early primary so that everybody's voice is in on the primary.
This is a big deal. It will mean that there'll be more presidential visits.
Yep.
And it makes Utah relevant in a time when we normally wouldn't be.
Yeah,
it's exciting for the Democrats because they frequently think like, oh, we have no voice in this. So now if we can get in front of that and maybe get some more voices here in Utah, that'll help us foster our voices.
You know what else might be interesting if they hold? I don't know if people know this, but we are making a serious bid, meaning the Utah Republican Party, to have a presidential debate here.
Yeah.
You guys been following this one a little bit? I just know because the university would host it.
Yeah.
So Jason Perry, Thomas Wright, the Utah Debate Commission.
Another $1 million.
They're raising money, but some people think we have a pretty good shot at hosting a presidential debate, which I think would be lovely.
Well, it's fun where Utah is quickly on the national scene, percolating to the top of a lot of these issues. And like you said earlier, you know, somehow, environmental policy, national policy, Utah seems to be at the crossroads of a lot of these issues.
Policy,
immigration,
yeah.
Same thing.
Okay, well, so Dan, you've given me a nice segue because you talk about Utah being at the top. I was at lunch today with some really good friends, and we were kind of talking about what's going on in the community. And I mentioned to them, because I'm always bringing my economic expertise, I said, you know, come June, we will have the longest expansion in our state's history.
Hmm.
So that's a pretty big achievement.
Yeah.
But I said it in this context, and we didn't make much progress at all in education. So the four of us were hanging our heads because in a period of incredible prosperity and a thriving economy, we really didn't make a big move in education. So I'm going to throw that out, get your commentary. Kathleen?
Well, we have a huge teacher shortage here, and the teachers definitely feel undervalued. We did make some great strides in education. We brought in some social services, but you know, we have one of the highest rates of child abuse in our state, in the country, is here in Utah. 1 in 5 kids are going to be sexually assaulted before they're 18, which is just terrible. So right now we're battling with our sex ed and health standards, and so this is a big deal. You know, trying to address the opioid crisis, the sex abuse crisis,
suicide.
And
then just
part of our
general educational achievement for the workforce of the future, which is so important.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what we keep hearing, that we're not doing, you know, a good job to bring up our workers. And it's like, well, you know, if we're not going to have the infrastructure in place to start educating our kids to be critical thinkers by having smaller class sizes, building better relationships, then our workforce is definitely going to be impacted.
Kathleen, I know that you're on the Public Ed Appropriations Committee, right? Dan, what is your current assignment up on Capitol Hill?
Oh, brother. Why do you have to ask the hard questions? So
You used to have EdPro.
They're such long titles. You get lost in them.
Yeah, mine is infrastructure and general government. So it's basically, you know, buildings and infrastructure we build in the state.
But you have a lot of expertise in public education. If you were to wave a wand and could do something to help with public education, what would you do?
Oh, man. Boy, great question, right? Wave a wand. Boy, I wish I'd thought about this earlier. Let me think about that for a second. My earlier response was one thing that's ignored while we've seen in the longest expansion period, we've also seen our Medicaid expenses doubled in that same period of expansion.
It just eats away your prosperity.
It is so hard to talk about us gaining ground on anything when and I know, please don't take this as this horrible, heartless Republican side of things. But when you look at the budget buster that is Medicaid and the fact that we're expanding Medicaid, when you've seen an 8% per year growth in Medicaid expenses, and now we're going to be close to 11 to 12% a year in growth, we cannot keep up with that. And then on the same hand, be talking about how difficult it is to catch up in education. I totally agree.
Yeah.
I just don't know how to provide
for
both.
So you're talking
as
about the need. Go ahead, Kathleen.
As we increase Medicaid, though, we are going to start increasing the less that we need at the end of the road. So it has to be given out in the front, you know? I mean, because if we're investing in our population, when they start to get older and they start to join the workforce, they'll be better educated. There'll be less people missing schools. There'll be less people missing work. I mean, to pay for school and then have half your class out sick or a third of your class out sick because they didn't get a flu vaccination, that's really a waste of money for everything else. And then to have, you know, your workforce not being ready to come to their jobs is really hard as well. So I think it's an investment in our communities and not just a big check.
So, Dan, the wand that I would wave, and then you can do your wand thing, but I would do two things, I think, just immediately. I want to get more guidance counselors.
Definitely.
I want to get students to feel like they're got a, I don't know, like personal touch on their decisions post high school.
Oh, interesting.
So, and I just think that is an easy thing to fund.
Yeah.
Well, our kids,
meaning that the payoff would be so great. There's so many that don't pursue anything after high school, and that's a real problem in this economy.
Our kids are feeling more stress earlier in life, and they feel like once they get out of sixth grade and into middle school, if they haven't figured out where they want to go, they're just lost. So I think that we need to provide quicker and more robust services in the elementary school levels, because if they feel like they're not good at math, then they feel like their jobs are evaporating, which is really sad because I mean, like, I didn't think about what I wanted to be until I was in high school. How about you?
I was in college.
I mean, my kids say to me right now, what am I going to be when I grow up? I'm like, really? You're only in sixth grade. You don't have to
don't
figure it out
yet.
Just now.
Second thing I would do, and this is really current, but we've got really on the table, you two both know this as legislators, but a $200, $250 million tax cut that's been brokered around. It didn't happen, but there's still, you know, some money there and some things that are going to happen maybe in special session. I might cut that in half.
Yeah.
And in other words, you've got to find some way to invest. And I worry that we've taken this prosperity and we haven't invested it back enough to keep us prosperous.
Yeah, I see that. So if I was to wave, this will be a very populist thing to say, but if I was to wave a magic wand, I'd make sure that all of our teachers were making above the average wage in the state of Utah.
What is the average wage?
We're just above 50 now. I think it's 51,000 a year.
The average teaching salary is 40 across the state.
Especially at the starting level.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, sorry. That's what I meant.
At the starting level, I know that it's at 40, but I know that, you know, we have done a lot specifically in the legislature over the last 5 years. Specifically, we've given everybody a $15,000 raise across the board.
This is a common misconception that the state can't really dictate how much money teachers make. That's a local decision by every district, which creates a lot of tension up on the Hill because people think that they can just give money to districts, but districts have to choose and negotiate the salaries individually.
And that's, you know, that's true. The hardest part, though, if I was, you know, again, magic wand, all things equal, I would try and get every teacher above the average wage. And I think when you look at that average wage for the state of Utah, I think it do a lot of things. One, it would probably raise the average rate or average wage in Utah. But I think the problem is, or the benefit, you can't leave behind our first responders at the same time, right? So, and that's when you know, again, I have a magic wand. I don't have to balance a budget. That's what I'd do.
Yeah. Boy, that there's so many things.
That was one of our biggest bills, was trying to give our first responders, our police force, better services and better benefits, because they are leaving just like teachers mm-hmm. are. And so we're investing maybe $50,000 to $100,000 in all these employees, and then they're leaving. And so as we look to try to bring people into the state that have a higher income level so that we can have a better workforce, we are actually exporting some of our most talented people.
Interesting. Okay, staying with the money theme, state prison.
Some senators.
State prison. News report saying that it's 20% over budget, 18 months behind schedule. I don't know if you guys buy that summary of it. But
I'm going to pay for it.
Dan and Kathleen, that doesn't sound like the best managed state in America.
Does not to me either.
Well, okay. Let's talk about something.
Moving it into the swampland doesn't really seem like the best thing. And they can't really find any hard ground to build it on, which is a little concerning for me because those locks kind of have to work when you're working at a prison.
So that being said, I take nothing away from that. If for those of you that work in construction or work in real estate or around real estate and you watch what real estate prices have done over the last, 5 years, we've seen a more than 20% increase in prices in the aggregate on home prices. And guess what? The competing then means our subs are getting paid more when they're building replacement product. And when you got subs building more on the residential side, guess what your costs do on everything else? Everything else escalates.
Yeah.
This goes to what I am learning during this cycle, which is governments build stuff in downturns. The private market builds stuff in the upturns, right? Mm-hmm. And I think if you look at the way we could have built this differently, if I was just to mm-hmm. take a perfect, again, I have a magic wand, right?
Yeah.
I just go back and wave a magic wand. And I would say I'd wait for a slower market or a slower recession.
There's a bit of a, I don't know if all the elements of the perfect storm, but you have the airport being built, which is taking so much labor. You have a housing shortage that's taking a bunch of labor. You have a president that's putting on tariffs on steel and whatnot.
Yeah.
That's not helping. But
well, come on, the tariffs on steel, you did see a report the other day that most of the tariffs on steel are all bluster and no actual cost.
I've seen both. I've seen both reports, so I'm trying to figure that out.
I want to believe the ones that confirm my bias.
I think you have a responsibility, right, as the minority party to be holding, the Republicans accountable here. Is there anything happening on the Democratic side about the prison, or are you guys just all thinking they're on the right track?
They're too busy booking extended stays.
Well, that's how we feel about the Republicans, because who's going to be building on that land once we move that president, that prison? So when I look at the prison, a lot of the people that I talk to want to keep open spaces. And so if we're going to move the prison from a congested spot where it's already built and only rebuild to put in new houses and then put it in an open space, that's really concerning to me. The legacy highway was a big deal for me mm-hmm. in the committee that I was in. And, one of my senators said, well, that cost us $347 million. I'm like, well, that was a lawsuit that we didn't really come out on top of. So as I look at how we have to balance our budget, and I'm told by my counterparts that we always have to balance the budget, I see a lot of waste going on. Mm-hmm. I mean, this prison being moved, going over budget, Legacy Parkway, then, these lawsuits that we're going to take on with our new legislation about whether you can have an abortion or not, and mm-hmm. then also private lands versus public lands and federal mm-hmm. lands coming to state lands. So when we want to talk about balancing the budget and then we have these kind of things going on, that's a lot of money that's being wasted.
Fair enough. Dan, it's time to go to gripes. And that alone could be a gripe
that
the people holding the state's purse strings are tossing around millions here, millions there, and it's not as tight as it should be. But
at least
what's
we
your
have
gripe?
That going for us. My gripe this week, social media. I'm out. I am on
I don't
fast.
Believe you because you're a social media guy.
I have been fasting now since last Thursday, and honestly, my life has never felt better.
I'm big sucking sound was in my life. It was the lack of your tweets.
Lack of my tweets, lack of posting on social media.
What's motivating this for you?
I feel fantastic. Because, the cruddy thing is you do something you think is going to be positive in the community, and somehow it trolls. And I just don't understand how when you think you're doing something positive, right, and you're listening and you're learning and you're trying to, I could write a script. Democrats say Republicans don't listen. Republicans book meeting to listen. Democrats get afterwards complain, why weren't we invited? Republicans say, you're invited next time. And they say, we don't want to come. I mean, it's this nonstop deal. And you could flip the labels on that very easily regardless in whatever stage. All I'm saying is I just wish sometimes people could do something good that is a political type of person. And everybody says, Not half bad.
Yeah.
Thanks for trying.
Kathleen, do you have a gripe to share?
You sucked at it, but thanks for trying.
My gripe is that Dan isn't on Twitter anymore. no, I guess
he
I'd
provides
have
a lot of entertaining.
I guess I'd have to go with the fact that we waste a lot of money on lawsuits. As a state office of education, we had a couple of lawsuits that wasted a lot of money also. And yeah. I think we should just learn to kind of be a little bit more frugal.
Good one. I started following Dan about 3 months ago, and we'd been friends for like 2 years. And he's like, wow, what did I do to earn that, Miss Natalie?
I just sent her a picture of her following me. I'm like, ooh, I've arrived.
Hey, my gripe is the potholes. It's been a really harsh winter, and I think it's just destroyed our roads, all the freezing, thawing, and be careful out there.
Transportation committee. I'll get on that.
Yeah, there's some big potholes, so that's my gripe. Well, it's time to end our program. I've been with Senator Kathleen Reby, a Democrat, my senator, and with Senator Dan McKay, Natalie Gochner from the Political Center, and the program is produced by Anthony Scoma. Thank you for listening.